Because starting out, we'd ask, what are some of the positive aspects of humor from a religious perspective, and what would be some negative aspects or things to be careful for? So what do you think? What about positive aspects?
It improves your mood, so it helps you to be bisimcha.
So it helps you be bisimcha, helps you be happy, and certainly those around us as well. It can lift the spirits
and
of other people.
At others favorably.
Did you kind of hint also that it helps with the memory?
So the rabbi jokes, right? You'll remember the jokes, so you have something to associate a teaching with.
And humor makes it more interesting to learn than just dry.
Right, that it adds another aspect to the learning experience.
Right, it's not just facts. It has to have a little bit.
Right, there's something else there. So what would be aspects of humor that would be negative or that we have to be careful about?
If you make fun of people, if you make fun of someone.
Making fun of people.
Yeah. Like, that's not humor. But people think it's funny when they say something making fun of people.
Right, and it may be funny, but it's at someone's expense.
Sarcasm or ridicule.
Sarcasm,
So I could see a difference between sarcasm and ridicule. Sarcasm would probably, fall into either category. There may be a place for sarcasm. But ridicule, unless there's something that's worthy of ridicule, is probably something negative. And we'll see. There is an aspect of late sunnus and kalas rosh, frivolity, which are really ridiculing serious things. So that's something that is generally considered negative.
But also, I don't know if women, but I thought men were sort of prohibited from being too frivolous.
Right, there are certainly risks of being frivolous, and I think it probably applies to both genders, that when certain barriers are removed, and when people aren't necessarily thinking, at least having their values straight, so it can certainly end in things that are undesirable.
Weddings sometimes they have a bad fun.
So weddings have a batchan. Right. Right, and sometimes there's a gray area of jokes. Will a person appreciate a joke about themselves? If there's some self-deprecating humor, it's something to be careful about. I also add that I'm not going to focus on that so much, but as far as aspects of humor that can be inconsistent with Torah values is the category of nivel peh, of foul language. It particularly refers to language of a more sexual nature, but that's something that is looked very much down upon, and I think it's something that can affect a person's personality. People use certain words, that's something that I think is clear that would not be consistent with Torah values. But if we look at sources describing humor, so we find various perspectives. So first I want to take a look at the sources that describe humor, that offer perspectives on humor, and then I want to take a look and do we find examples of the rabbis in the Talmud in particular employing humor? Did they have a sense of humor? Was everything cut and dry, this is the law? Or was it sometimes enhanced by a certain humorous aspect, either subtly or explicitly? So first, the perspective that humor is valuable. And as Debbie mentioned, humor has the ability to lift people up, both oneself and others. In fact, if you look at the first source, the Gemara from Tainus, it says that it describes how Rabbi Yochanan, Broca, had certain people who were on a high enough spiritual level to have conversations with Eliyahu Navi, right? He's around, and there's certain people who who have that inside relationship. So apparently, Rabbi Broca had such a relationship. And they were going around taking a look at, so this person, what will his share in Olam Haba be, in the world to come? So Eliyahu would tell him. So they saw Eliyahu and Rabbi Broka, so they saw two brothers in the marketplace. And Eliyahu said to Rabbi Broka, he said that these two also have a share in the world to come. And Rabbi Broka went over to the men and said to them, what is your occupation? And they said to him, we are jesters, right? They're the bat chanim. And we cheer up the depressed or the sad. And alternatively, when we see two people have a quarrel between them, we strive to make peace. And Elio and Navi, Elijah the prophet, is saying, these are people who have a share of the world to come. Look what good they do with their humor. Look what their humor accomplishes. They lift people's spirits. And if two people are in a fight, they diffuse the tension by adding a joke. And I think we've all seen that happen. People could be in a serious argument. Someone makes a joke. Maybe at first it's not appreciated by the people in the argument because they want to stay in the argument. But see, sometimes when there's a lot of attention, a joke can really diffuse that tension.
Except for one thing, though. What this is describing is what these people do as an occupation. So in other words, today we may say, well, one of them is maybe a mediator, you know, who are able to arbitrate between people who have a quarrel or a feud, whatever it is. The other one is people who are maybe like a psychologist. So it's like you're using humor in your job, which is, I don't think it's, you're not allowed to do, but it's not meaning that that's what the objective of the person is, right? It's part of his job.
Right. And it seems that even a comedian, or I'll say a clown, something of that nature, these are what we call a batchan, is something that's a valuable profession. We normally wouldn't think. We think of people who are the people who hold the highest place in the world to come. So it could be the clowns. It could be the jesters. That's what the Gemara is telling us, that if used properly, this can be a very valuable even occupation.
Major medical benefit.
Mm. Right. A lot of the people who are...
Israel is a leader in this field.
And the people who are in good spirits tend to live longer. You know, I think it does have a real effect on one's health. And unfortunately, sometimes it's the opposite way. Then people, aren't happy. It can sometimes be deteriorating to health. So it's something we see is very important. One, to lift people's spirit, and also to diffuse tension with humor. So the next source discusses and differentiates between humor that's positive and humor that's negative. So it discusses in Koheles and Ecclesiastes, the Shlomo HaMelech presents different, seemingly different perspectives on humor. And the Gemara makes a distinction. The type of joy that's described positively is a called Simcha Shel Mitzvah, the joy that comes from doing a mitzvah. That when we do mitzvot, so there are certainly special times of the year that we're supposed to rejoice, on Yom Tov, and other times, that the joy that can come out of doing a mitzvah, joy that can come out of learning Torah, that can come out of tefillah, the connection with Hashem, that's a good type of joy. And a joy that's not associated with the mitzvah is something that's may not be so positive. And he goes further. The Gemara says, "Ametka to teach you in source 2, she'ein shechina shore lo mitoch atzvos, that the shechina, the divine presence, doesn't rest upon a person when he's very sad, v'lo mitoch atzlos, and not when he's lazy, v'lo mitoch schok, and not through a negative type of laughter, lo mitok halas rosh, and not through frivolity, lo mitok ksicha velo mitok dvarim betalim, and not through idle chatter, and not through talk without a purpose. The ela mitok davar simcha shel mitzvah. Rather, the simcha that's considered appropriate is a simcha related to a mitzvah. And then, so when is it appropriate to have simcha? So it discusses now how a Torah teacher and their students, what the relationship should be. Do you think the relationship should be one of seriousness, one of simcha, of happiness, or even of humor? What do you think is appropriate between a student and a teacher? Should a teacher be lighthearted with the student? Should a student be lighthearted with the teacher?
to a certain degree.
Certain degrees,
that we get through to the student. I mean, what works with a student?
Also, the age of the student. Yeah. You know, with young kids, humor goes a long way.
So it could be an educational technique.
You have to balance it. There has to be a balance.
So that's from a teacher to a student. What about from a student to a teacher?
Student to
so in both directions.
Okay.
So a student to a teacher may be different.
I think you have to be given permission to be funny. Humorous, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, no, the teacher doesn't usually appreciate it.
Well, maybe they
depends.
Do.
Sometimes. Depends.
So it says, so Rava said, this is in the English in source too, that Rav Gidl said in the name of Rav, so if any Torah scholar, if any student of Torah sits before his teacher and his lips do not drip bitterness, they shall be burnt. Meaning that they should have, it seems to indicate that a student should have a sense of trepidation in front of his teacher. And so it says, is that no difficulty? The both apply to the teacher. So one applies to the student, and one applies to the teacher. And say that how should a teacher act towards a student? So we have the sage Rabba who would open up his shir, his lecture, with a joke. Right? It's probably, why do you do that? You know, you come in, not every student is totally awake, it's totally ready to learn. So what would you do? He'd tell a joke at first.
That's break
smart,
the ice.
Because they say it with presentations, you should start with
a joke. Yeah. You break the ice.
Wow. And that was just so long ago. Oh, unbelievable. That's Torah wisdom.
Yep. That was
Stern. You always start with a sermon.
Yeah.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
And did it get? And it got people to listen.
At least to the joke.
At least to the joke. Okay, so it's a start.
A joke, and then
he didn't write his sermon.
He didn't make drasha like a joke and a drasha, but before.
It would just be an opening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the drasha wouldn't necessarily be humorous.
Yeah, right.
No. So that's actually what the Gemara says. Yeah. Right.
And some people will come on time if they don't want to miss the joke, right?
That may be the best part.
Right. They come at the beginning.
But with the jokes always funny?
Yeah.
You know, you win some, you lose some.
Rabbi Stern's jokes are pretty good. No, Rabbi Stern's jokes are pretty good.
My triolers have a special sense of humor.
So, I say, so how should a teacher relate to his students as far as humor? So it says that before, you know, it's not a contradiction to say that in one sense a teacher should be serious, and in one sense that simcha or humor is appropriate. It says that when, just like you said, Rabbi Stern did, when you open the drasha, or when you start the lesson, so start with a joke. But then when you're teaching something serious, so you should teach with a certain amount of awe for the topic that you're talking about. And that really touches on the idea of, you know, late sunnus, of frivolity, you know, that it's making fun of something serious. Meaning, you know, let's say a teacher or a rabbi, you know, their whole lecture, the whole, you know, sermon was something that's a joke, you know, making fun of everything, so that may not be something that's appropriate. But you open up with a joke, that gets people to listen, and then you can really get into the substance.
Right. The challenge today, though, is to get the student respect and fear with trepidation the teacher. Because now the students are act with frivolity towards the teacher.
So do you think humor from the teacher helps that or makes it worse?
No. That's a good
question. And it's a question educationally. Should a teacher have you know, a stern appearance and presence? I mean, that way the kids will all listen. Or maybe if they are opened up with the joke and the kids are comfortable with them, maybe they'll listen to them. Unclear.
Right.
But it's an interesting question that I don't know has one answer.
Yeah.
You know, in one sense, a teacher does have to show that their respect is expected. But at the same time, it could be, it could form a more friendly relationship, and in a good way, between the teacher and the student. So that's something that, you know, educators have to balance. So having Rabba, he was teaching, you know, the sage of the Talmud, but Rabba, even for them, he thought it was effective to open up with a joke, and that was something that, that got them to listen. And then once they were listening, he would teach a topic with depth and would make sure that it had the seriousness that was appropriate. So there are also some sources that suggest that there are limitations on humor. And some of them are specifically connected to the destruction of the temple. That after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there actually is an expectation that we temper our joy sometimes. And what's an example of that? Where do we find that?
Break the glass for the chuppah.
We break the glass under the chuppah, even in a time of great joy. So we temper our joy with some reminder of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's actually something in Source 3, the Gemara in Brachos actually mentions that that was something that was done to temper joy. But we see a statement that in the absence of the temple, there's really a limitation on laughter and experiencing joy. The Gemara says in Source 3, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Asr la'adam shimale schok piv b'olam hazeh, that it's forbidden for a person to fill his mouth with laughter in this world, Shenemar, Azi male schok pinu ulshoneinu rina, when the Lord returns the captivity of Tzion, of Zion, will be as dreamers. V'zman she yomer b'agoyim higdil Hashem lasos imele, that then our mouths will fill with laughter and our lips with song. They will say among the nations, the Lord has done great things. So Amar Olav al Rish Lakish Shabi Yamav lo yimal leschok piv b'olam hazeh, that they said about Rish Lakish that throughout his life he did not fill his mouth with laughter in this world. Once he heard the statement, Miki Shama Rabbi Yochanan Rabbe, until he heard the statement from Rabbi Yochanan, that he took it very seriously, and he really held back from indulging in, you know, real joy in this world, and, you know, with laughter. It was something that it seems like there's an aspect of, you know, mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. In the absence of the Beis HaMikdash in a fully built Yerushalayim, it's saying that we can't be totally happy. And if this sounds somewhat extreme, so we see that someone, Reish Lakish, actually, presumably he wasn't, sad or angry all the time, but the fact that he limited his joy, so that's Reish Lakish. But even nowadays, we still have the practice after a chuppah to limit our joy, to follow in this teaching.
That's not why people cry at a wedding, though.
Right, and now there's a question whether it should be, you know, at the very end, or maybe even if they're going to say the Sam Imishkechech Yerushalayim, it should really make sense to say it to break the glass before, because, you know, now what happens? You break the glass, you know, they bang on the drums, Mazel Tov, and they start playing music. The whole point of breaking the glass is actually to, you know, be a sobering moment. So, you know, whatever it is, a wedding's still happy, but at least it's a reminder.
Yeah, a lot of jokes about Jews, though, like the whole thing about suffering. Like, you can't be totally happy. We can't.
We're always worrying about something.
And I guess a lot of therapists would have, you know, a problem with that. Like, can't you be happy? Like, totally happy? Like, why do you have to always have something to be not happy about?
Right. So I differentiate between clinical depression and mental health issues, which is something that in the medical realm. But I think what it's saying, and it really shows how central the Beis HaMikdash is for us, that, you know, if one would fully realize the gravity of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, it would follow that their joy couldn't be fully expressed. And we see certain individuals like Rish Lakish who, especially once he heard the teaching they were supposed to limit joy, actually acted in accordance with this.
I mean, there were people who, I've heard this a long time ago, people would wake up at midnight or 1 yeah. o'clock in the morning.
Might still, it's still a practice,
I'm
right?
Not sure many people do it.
Tikkun chatzot.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that is done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that's done.
But wasn't there a rabbi recently who he would say, if he saw somebody frowning in the street, he'd say, you know, just because you're having a bad day doesn't mean you have to give me like your sad face. You should sort of smile and greet people.
Right. So greeting people is considered very important, and it could be difficult especially if we look at source one, because you say there's such a value that people who make other people smile are for people who earn a place in the world to come. So I think we'd still be happy, but there's still it has to be tempered by just the realizing of the gravity of the loss. Meaning, if someone, you know, God forbid, experiences a loss, so they, you know, move on, you know, with life, and you know every loss is different, but there's still that absence. The absence is still there.
My wife told me that when she was in the Israeli army in the 80s, or early 80s, you know, routinely they would get like these great Israeli comedy troops that would come and make the troops happy, because they're dealing with death every day, and you know, you lose your comrades, you lose your friends, and then, but it's a myth, you know, and this is all these guys did. They went from unit to unit and had these big performances, and they made people laugh. So there is, you know, there is a place for it at the right time.
Of course. I think it's saying that naturally that there's going to be some feeling of loss because of the absence of the Beis HaMikdash.
Does the Talmud share like what the joke is that the rabbis would share? Like, is there an example? I'd be curious.
So hopefully we'll get to that. If we don't get to that today, maybe we can continue it next time. But we do see, you know, some humor that's subtle. But we do see at least some things that, so some are subtle, but some things, you know, are. Could be reasonably understood as being humorous.
Yeah, like it's hard to imagine like these like sages.
Right, I don't know if they're doing stand up, but we do see that they had a sense of humor. Look at source four, the Talmud in Nida describes a really an absurd case that there's a question posed that if a woman gave birth to some sort of animal-like creature. So the question was, would Kiddushin work? Would that creature, you know, there's a discussion whether it's human, but at least one understanding is this wouldn't live very long. So let's say man gives this woman creature that emerges from a regular woman, a ring, does that, do they become legally married? And the ramifications of that would be, does the sister, let's say this creature, this very unusual human has a sister, so does the sister become forbidden to the person who did the betrothal, because if the betrothal worked, because you're not allowed to marry a sister of someone who you're married to. So they go. So this question is posed, and it does touch upon, you know, technical legal aspects. Meaning, you could then, you know, discuss the question and see, you know, and look at the technicalities and try to find the answer. But the Talmud says that when Rabbi Yirmiyahu was asking this question, so really he says that Ad Kan Aviyu Yirmiyahu Rabbi Zeir Lidei Yekov Elogichek, that he was really doing this. Why is he doing this? Okay, you could try to find out what the law is, but it's an absurd case. And he was doing it to try to make Reb Zeira laugh. But even still, Reb Zeira.
But he was asked to paskan, so like you got to be very good.
Right, but he was presenting. It didn't seem like he was coming forth with a practical case he was dealing with. He was presenting this very absurd, hypothetical type of case. But what was he doing? And here we see at least one example. We're trying to make another sage laugh.
Right, but it backfired.
Then, and he said Reb Zeira didn't laugh. But why didn't he laugh? So Rashi there says that it says that Rabbi Yirmiyah tried all of these plots to get Rabbi Zeira to laugh, but it references the teaching that we saw in Source 3 that it's forbidden to fill one's mouth with laughter, and Rabbi Zeira was stringent upon himself, that he also realized the gravity of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, and even this presentation of this absurd case didn't even get him to laugh. And you could think that, you know, the case would, it seems like in different kind of niches, that there's different humor. You know, people who are, I guess, into science, there's probably some humor there, or math jokes. I was never into math, but like, you know, math, I can say math geeks, but there's like all humor in different areas. So you can imagine in among the Talmudic sages, this was funny. And
I used to think there's a law that two men cannot allow a woman or a pig to pass between them.
Mm-hmm. So a man shouldn't walk between two women.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think there's some, it's like a Gemara or something, and it said a pig also.
It could be. I'm not sure.
I thought it was a joke. Yeah, because, look like, what was the likelihood of that happening?
Right. Right, but the question how it applies practically, but there is an idea that a man should avoid walking in between two women. And a separate discussion. So here's another case. This is one of the classic cases that are, you know, they're quoted when we think of Talmudic humor. Is there was a sage Bar Kappara, who was known to have a sense of humor. He was a little bit of a comedian, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who is the compiler of the Mishnah, so apparently he had a stomach ailment for 14 years, and I think as we discussed last year in the Shir, that there's an idea that some types of suffering, especially by righteous people, have the ability to atone for the generation. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi understood that his suffering was served this effect, that it would atone for the people in the generation. So he said to Bar Kappara, "Don't cause me to laugh, and I'll pay you. I'll give you 40 of wheat in return." He understood that his condition and his suffering was something that had this positive effect on the generation. So Bar Kappara is joking with him, and at a certain point, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi couldn't hold it in, and he left. And he says, "Didn't I warn you not to make me laugh?" So we see that even the most serious people can be. All right, so Dr. What exactly he did? He tried to bargain with this. He took the large palm basket, smeared it with tar, overturned it upon his head. You know, he was a jokester, and you see that even the most serious person, can be cracked. I think we see this. It's people who are very serious, but something gets them.
Physical.
Right, right. A little slapstick.
Right.
So you also see that in different times and cultures, different things were considered funny. And I think we see this nowadays too. I don't offend any like Monty Python fans or British people. It just doesn't. People think it's hilarious, right? Some people, but it's just either you think it's funny or not. And Britain, they have a sense of humor, and the Jews have a sense of humor. So it really depends on what speaks to you. But this was something that it must have been very funny if it got such a serious person to laugh. So the next couple of sources discuss the place of humor, because we've seen on one hand, humor is good to the extent that people who make other people laugh and smile have a place in the world to come. On the other hand, there are meant to be limitations, both because lightheadedness and frivolity can cause people to stumble, and in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, our humor is meant to be tempered. So how do we determine what type of humor is good? So it would seem that we see some sources that speak pretty negatively about humor in general, not even related to the Beis HaMikdash. The Talmud in Source 7 says, Yirmiyahu bar Ava says there are four classes of people who will not greet the divine presence. So they're cynics, flatterers, liars, and slanderers.
But who said they're comedians then? But they're just insincere. They're not
so late sonim. Late sonim, again, it's not, it has very negative connotations, but you know, people who didn't make fun of things that are meant to be serious. Mm-hmm. In the Mesillas Yesharim, one of the great works of Musar, so it mentions that people who are late sonim, they'll make fun. Let's say they hear a lecture or something that's inspiring, that's meant to draw them to tshuva. Okay, let's just make fun of it. You know, if it's something that, and that can really prevent someone from improving. Mm-hmm. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Source 8, says, Rabbi Dosa and Harkinah says that morning sleep, afternoon wine, childish chatter, and gathering of the ignorant remove a person from this world. So, it seems to be something that, is at best a waste of time, but something that can be spiritually dangerous.
Do you think somebody, I don't know if you know these people, but you might be too young, but somebody like Joan Rivers or Dawn Rickles?
Yeah, Joan Rivers is actually from Larchmont, where
the
I grew up.
Self-deprecating humor. Yeah.
Would they, and they also used to make a lot of fun. Dawn Rickles. They made a lot of fun of other people, but that was their occupation. That's how they made their living. Would they be considered one of these four classes?
So I don't want to judge individual people, but there is a very serious prohibition of certainly of hurting people's feelings, onus devarim, saying things that are literally means damaging with words, and that can include, reminding. Let's say someone did something mistake in their past, reminding them of their past, doing something that embarrassing people. You know, it's something that's especially embarrassing people. We say it's in some ways akin to murder. That better to jump into a fiery furnace than to insult someone or embarrass someone in public. So
they turn red. It's like blood rushing. That's when you kill them.
Right. So it's you have to be very careful. It could be, and it's a question that comes up with Purim spiels. So sometimes Purim spiels will make fun of, let's say, the rabbi or the Rosh Hashiva. In some ways, they really do. You know, hopefully they don't cross the line, but it's a real question of embarrassing people and making people laugh at someone's expense. You think if someone's insulted or is embarrassed, and then people are laughing at them, meaning that could be the worst.
But that's what a lot of these Jewish comedians deliberately do as part of their occupation. Like
just because they get paid for it, right? I mean, I guess right.
Yeah. No, but
part of their spiel is to embarrass people in the audience.
Right. So technically, I guess they wouldn't be halakhically allowed to do what they do.
It seems very dangerous. It seems like playing with fire. Again, the question comes up with Purim spiels, but at best, you'd have to be very careful because it's such a serious thing to embarrass someone.
And even close
the very thing by calling someone a name.
Mm-hmm. But that's what these roasts are all about. They're roasts. They roast them, and everybody's laughing.
So it could be if you know that the person also finds it funny. Even then, it's tricky. Meaning, you want to have a sense of humor. I don't think a person should get offended at everything. They have to know when something is meant as a joke. But it's something that it seems like from the sources you'd have to better to play it safe. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do it in Ofruf, they'll do a roast. It could be different if you're among friends and it's pretty clear that nothing personal or insulting is meant, but as far as a comedian, even picking someone out of the audience, how do you know that person will find it funny?
Right.
Maybe you're saying you're going to a comedy club at your own risk, but just the idea of insulting someone or embarrassing someone is something that is considered very, very serious in Judaism. So I would think that, if anything, you have to be very careful. So in Source 9, the Maharal basically takes the approach that, I mean, it's all in moderation. He's commenting on this Mishnah that says, Jesus suggests excessive sleep, drinking, chatter, and in certain social gatherings are negative. But he says that of the things that are mentioned, so in small doses, they can actually be good things. He says they can actually enhance our health. That you don't want to be sleeping all day, but sleep is good. Maybe a glass of wine every once in a while could be a good thing. Maybe and then he gets into humor and conversation. If you look after the ellipsis marks in Source 9, he says the chatter of children is a parable for humor and levity, which a bit of it is also good to restrain and make the soul rejoice. But he said, but only with great men who have words of wisdom in their jokes. But children chatter, presumably levity and scorning, which you just mentioned, without any type of wisdom, is something that's negative. It's not going to cause the soul to rejoice, but will confuse the person. So it sounds like from here that there is a place for humor, but humor should have a certain depth to it. And it seems like the people who are learned are maybe the people who are most qualified to express humor. And I would say lahavdil to differentiate, but we see that even with comedians, there are some comedians who are just, say, flat out dirty, mm-hmm. or it's very unsophisticated. And some humor is a little more sophisticated. Sometimes humor can make you think, or can be a social commentary about an issue. There's definitely a range of humor, both the content and the function. So it's saying that really humor should be expressed by people who are conveying some type of depth. But he says a little bit could be good, and even a little bit chatter. You don't have to be serious all the time. And only that, there's the Talmud says that among the great people, even they're called the Sichas Chulin, their mundane conversation, you're supposed to learn. And that really touches upon our whole series. Meaning we're not just looking at laws, we're looking at the conversations that the rabbis had. And even when they're talking about seemingly mundane things, we're supposed to learn that. They have depth. It can be we mentioned a way of conveying information. Their jokes and their humor can have something to teach us. So it can serve the function, says the Maharal, both of calming us down. Sometimes we need that comic relief, but also it can be an educational method.
There's one rabbi who's a teacher, and he creates riddles using Torah thoughts. I think that's a good use of humor.
Right, I'm sure it can be a memory device as well.
Yeah.
So now, what about the rabbi's sense of humor? So now we're going to see some of their expressions of humor. So one source is Talmud in Pesachim, which this speaks about preparing for Pesach, that when we clean for Pesach, so we put some bread away, and we're supposed to keep it in a safe place in case a weasel, or called a marten, comes in and takes some of it and spreads it around the house. It's always a challenge when you put out your 10 pieces of bread and you don't find them all. It can be a big problem. So question is, do you have to put it in a concealed location? So that won't require searching after it, because there is a concern that the marten may take the remaining 11. So there's discussion between Rava and Abaye. So Abaye says there's a distinction between the 14th of Nisan, the day before Pesach, and the 13th. So on the 13th, people haven't finish cleaning for Pesach. So bread is plentiful. It's around. The Martin can find it easily. So he doesn't hide it, and there's not a concern that he's going to see that piece of bread that you put out is going to drag it away, and then you won't be able to find it. And Rava says, there's this Martin, which we in Chini Hebrew is a Chulda. And who was Chulda? So Chulda was a prophetess. So it's a play on words. Is this Martin but using the word Chulda, a prophetess that knows now is the 14th of Nisan and no one will bake until the evening, and it leaves over bread and conceals it in its hole. And so Rava rejected it by his answer and said, with regard to the leaven that one leaves after the search, he should place it in a concealed location, lest the Martin take it before us and will require searching after it. So it's only if one actually sees the Martin take the leaven is he required to search for it. But it uses this pun. This Martin is called a Chulda. And it says it's Chulda, and he knows when it's the 13th or the 14th. It's actually conveying a law, but it's saying it shouldn't depend on necessarily what date it is, because it's not like this weasel is Martin knows what date it is. It's not a prophet like Chulda. There are probably other plays on words that you could do, but there's clearly a play on words, meaning the immediate context has nothing to do with the prophetess, but it's a pun based on the name of the animal.
And that reminds me of the story of the little boy that hears that there's not going to be any bread, so he hides a few bagels in his bedroom.
Right. No, that's what we do. We take bagels, put them in our pockets. But it does become a practical law with when you search for chametz. But I think it shouldn't depend on what day it is, whether the 13th or the 14th, because this. At the end of the day, this weasel is just a weasel. This Chulda is not the prophetess Chulda. I think what it does is now you'll remember this idea. You always think Chulda, the weasel.
Yeah.
So here's another case. The Talmud in Bava Kamma, which speaks about damages. So it says that this Hanan Bisha, Hanan the wicked, he slapped someone. He went before Rav Huna, and Rav Huna says, "Go give him a half a dinar." So Hanan said he had a clip dinar. He wanted to give him half a dinar from it, but there's no one who wanted to take it. For him to give him smaller coins for it. The Hanan the wicked then gave him another slap. So now he had to pay an additional fine of half a dinar. They gave him the clip dinar as payment. So you see, okay, so I'm... No one wanted to give me change.
This again.
Right? No one wanted to break my dinar in half. Don't want to give me change. So, okay, so now I'm owed a half a dinar. Okay, but I don't have change for that. So let me slap him again, then I can give him my coin, and I'll get my money's worth. So you have another example. The Talmud in Avodah Zarah speaks about Levi and Rabbi Shimon, the son of Yehuda Nasi. We saw before, really refrained from laughing. So they were sitting before Yehuda Nasi. They were learning the Torah portion. And when they finished, so now they wanted to go and start something new. So they said, what should we learn together? So Levi said he wanted to learn Mishlei. He wanted to learn the book of Psalms, of Proverbs. And Rabbi Shimon, the son of Yehuda Nasi, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, said, I want to learn Tehillim. So one wants to learn Mishlei, one wants to learn Tehillim. So he compelled Levi to acquiesce, and they bought him. They brought a book of Tehillim, which Rabbi Shimon, the son of Yehuda Nasi, wanted to learn. So when they arrived at a particular verse in Tehillim, it says, "But his delight is in the Torah of the Lord." So Yehuda Nasi explained, "What does this mean?" And this is a very important idea that a it is Ein Adam lomid Torah ela b'makom shelibo chafetz, that a person should learn those parts of Torah that speak to them. I think this is something that it is very important for us that we're meant to learn. We're meant, you know, if we're drawn to a certain part of Torah, a certain area of Torah, it means something that, you know, that's what we should learn. You know, there's nothing wrong with learning something that you're particularly interested in.
Well, there's so much to learn that you may as well at least start with what you're interested in.
Is that what I've heard in the name of the Arizal, or the Kabbalists, is that everyone has a certain limited time here. Maybe we come in different than reincarnations, but this time the things that we're drawn to are those parts of Torah that we're meant to learn. See, one of my colleagues at Or Chaim said he went to high school in Israel, and he said that there was in one of the, maybe it was the last year in high school, they had this elective learning Mashalim Chafetz, what their heart desires. They would do different topics that are maybe different than the standard curriculum. So Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi Huda Hanasi, taught this idea. And so what did Levi say? He said, now you've given me permission to leave because I want to study Mishle. You want to study Tehillim. But you just said that a person needs to study what their heart desires. Okay, so I'm going to go. You just convinced me. You're teaching from Tehillim, you know, convinced me that, okay, see you later. Mm-hmm. See, there's an element of irony there. You have another case in Source 13, another case of outwitting someone. So the sages thought that once Rosh Hashanah occurred on Shabbat, and all the cities gathered the great Sanhedrin in Yavne for the festival prayers. So the question here was, do we apply the rabbinic decree that on Shabbat we don't sound the shofar, out of a fear that someone might carry it in a public domain? So within the boundaries of Jerusalem, so this decree was not operative. They limited it to that. But then the question is, Yavne, did it have the status of Jerusalem? Should they institute that decree there or not? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to Bnei Batera, the sons of Batera, who were the leading halakhic authorities of the generation. So Yochanan ben Zakkai maintained that they should sound the shofar just like they did in the temple. And they said to him, okay, let us discuss whether it's permitted. Meaning Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you're a great sage, but you're not the only voice here, so let's discuss it. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, First, we'll sound the shofar, and then afterwards we'll discuss. So they sounded the shofar, and the sons of Batera said, okay, you said we're going to discuss, now let's discuss. And the Yochanan ben Zakkai said to them, the shofar has already been heard in Yavne, and one does not refute a ruling after action has already been taken. So we've already done it, the precedent has been set. So these are just some examples. So we see that the rabbis did have a sense of humor and placed value on a sense of humor, but we should understand that a humor, like many other things, has its risks. There are risks of, mentioned, embarrassing people, or using vulgarity, or making fun of things that are meant to be taken seriously. But if used correctly, humor can be a very powerful, uplifting method of both teaching and lifting people's spirits and resolving conflict. And it's something that if used correctly, hopefully we can enjoy humor and make others laugh in a way that the two people in that the Rebbe Broca saw, who would lift people's spirits and earn Olam Haba that way. Remember when there is a time to laugh, a time to be serious, but hopefully we should be able to have the full laughter, Az Yimalei Tzchok Pinu Ulshonei Nurina, that our mouths will be filled with laughter and our lips with song with the building of the Beis HaMikdash.